When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
He's homered. Derek Jeter homers to tie the game. And there it is. Hit number 3,000.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
Yes, that line
pours on the right.
Babe, oh, come on now, sing it with me.
Not that Maggie's back in town.
McMonagle here with you. I got you for 4 hours. We need that extra hour. We need it. Let's go. 877-337-6666. Alex on the other side. And we are going to recap one hell of a weekend, one hell of a Sunday, and a couple of garden teams on their way to the next round. I know I shouldn't count the money, right, Boomer? I'm sorry. The Knicks haven't done it yet, but they go up 3-1. We'll get to the Rangers in a second. We'll get to the baseball as well. But we start with Jalen Brunson, the superstar, and the New York Knicks as they go down to Philadelphia. They bring their fan base with them. And they take it to the 76ers, that dirty Embiid. And we're 97-92 to take a stranglehold on the series, 3-1. And yes, it starts with Brunson. We're going to get to some of the other stuff, but yes, it starts with the 47-point performance from Jalen Brunson, the best, as far as point totals go, performance in Knick history, in postseason Knick history. We've never seen it before. You remember what it used to be like? Do you remember the 90s? I remember the 90s. I know you have to go back to, obviously, Bernard King in the 80s to break this record, but all the playoff games the Knicks played, all those great teams in the 90s, we are watching. We are watching, and we did watch last night one of the great performances in Knick history and one of the great players this franchise has ever seen. That's what we've seen from him. He started off this series slow. We all know it. They won 2 games without him playing like this. He was a little bit better in game 3, even in a losing effort. But last night, what you saw from Jalen Brunson from the start of the game was getting his shots, getting to the basket, the footwork, catching them off balance. How many times did you see him in the paint either looking the other way to dish? And he still gets 10 dimes in this game. He still gets 10 assists. But his ability to shoot at unpredictable times, I'm not sure if that's the best way to put it, but his ability to suddenly go up with a shot, and that's how he's able to, at his size, get inside floaters, to get point paints, to get paint points, excuse me, point paints. What am I talking about? To get paint points with Embiid on him, with taller players, the ability to just get that shot up in a second's notice. But obviously huge in this game. And keeping them afloat at the beginning, as what's become seemed to be a custom in this series, falling behind early as much as 10, 12 points, whatever it was, at whatever point in this game, and Embiid playing well early on against Hartenstein, which is a turning point in this game we're going to get to in a second. But his ability, he keeps them in the game early on. And this game, they really weren't getting that secondary scoring. You could see it early on. And we talked about this a lot, how the role players and the three-point shooting, it's much better from the home team. And that you didn't expect to go into Philadelphia and have performances like you did for Bogdanović, who obviously gets hurt in this game with an ankle sprain and doesn't really even play in it. But, you know, you're not going to get the same kind of performances from DiVincenzo. You're not going to get the same kind of performances from McBride. You're not going to get these same kind of offensive performances. Well, they come up clutch in certain ways from a Hart, as far as offensively, who was terrible in this game. But you're not going to get those same kind of performances on the road that you could put, that you can get in your building. And though it might have sounded like Madison Square Garden in a lot of the game, as there's MVP chance breaking out, and that's obviously a talking point that's going to, and come from this game, and we'll get to it over the course of the show, 877-337-6666, about this fan base and how they showed up and how we're getting MVP chants and what they're chanting about Embiid outside the building right after the game. But Brunson's performance in this game, getting to the basket, getting to the line, catching the elbow on another cheap shot from Embiid, and still being able to, whether it's getting up in the, getting defenders up in the air and getting in ones, hitting a couple of threes, creating plays, getting 10 assists, but 47 points in this game. They needed this because, you know what? As great as the role players are, and as much as Achiuwa, who didn't even play in the first two games of this series, and we're going to get to what he did, and as much as you can get great performances from him and Anunoby and all these players, it doesn't work. And we can talk about this Sixers series that hopefully now is one win away on, Tuesday night from being over. But as great as some of these players are, and as much as we feel like they're better off than almost any other team they play because of the depth, because of the different guys who can shoot, because of the different guys who can play defense and rebound, as much as we feel like they're the more complete team, despite other teams having other superstars, they need their guy, Jalen Brunson, to be the guy. Yes, they got through two games of this series at home, relying on those role players, relying on McBride to come through with five threes, relying on different guys to come through in different moments, and Josh Hart to have four threes in a fourth quarter to win a game. And you can rely on that in spurts, and it might win you a game, it might win you two. But when you go on the road against Embiid, against Maxey, against a good team, and then moving forward, we'll see if it's the Pacers or the Celtics in the round after that. Who, I don't want to get too ahead of myself, but whoever it's going to be, if you want to win a series in this NBA playoffs, if they want to be a contender for an NBA championship, the Knicks, as great as they are everywhere else, and as much as that might be a strength over all the opposition, it doesn't work without Jalen Brunson being Jalen Brunson. And last night, he was incredible. And 47 points, we all watched. That was a virtuoso performance, the best scoring performance in the history of the New York Knicks come playoff time. A record that has stood for 40 years from Bernard King goes down last night. And as important as that was, it wasn't the turning point because they had that all game despite losing. What changed this game was the defensive adjustment this coach made after Hartenstein gets into foul trouble, having trouble guarding Embiid the entire game, and here we are with the role players. Now, you need the 47 from Brunson, right? We've established that. You need every bit of them, but you need him to be the stud. You need him to be able to get the points. You need him to be able to set up his teammates. You need him, those floaters and turn and fadeaway jump shots, to fall. Otherwise, they don't get to this point. But in the late third quarter and fourth quarter, when they make the decision to go to Anunoby and Achiuwa on Embiid, that changed the game. And watching them defensively down the stretch. Now, part of it is Embiid's exhausted, right? But besides stepping on people and all the energy that takes, and throwing elbows and kneeing people in the junk and pulling people down from the ground, besides all that energy, to play 40-plus minutes on this knee night in and night out, we talked about it. That's why I felt so positive about this series after game one and then again after game two, where the Knicks didn't even play their best. They didn't get the performances from Brunson, and Embiid was terrific. And you figured, how many of those can he have? And he shows up in game three and he gives you 50 points on top of all the nonsense. But you could see he can't do this for a seven-game series. It's asking too much. And in the fourth quarter, yes, he's probably tired, but also Achiuwa in his face. Achiuwa gets four blocks in this game. Two on Embiid in the fourth quarter on that last second three-pointer with the clock fading, and then the layup down around the basket, obviously. But multiple blocks, four blocks in the game. And his ability to come in and play defense and throw an Anunoby on him, shutting Embiid out, or he got 1 point on a foul shot, but 0-for-4 from the field in the fourth quarter, and they looked completely flummoxed in the fourth quarter. The two things that changed this game in the fourth quarter is the defense on Embiid from Achiuwa and Anunoby and the offensive rebounding. They out-rebound the 76ers 18-8 in the fourth quarter and 7 offensive rebounds. How many possessions did they? I mean, it was just remarkable. The amount of second chances and offensive rebounds, they're daggers to a team who are down points in the fourth quarter. And with Embiid doing nothing and the offense looking completely flummoxed, playing at the perimeter, just throwing the ball around, Embiid not getting into it, obviously, Maxey not getting into it. You had Oubre, who had, I guess, his best game of the series, but ultimately, they had no answers for the Knicks' defense and rebounding in the fourth quarter of this game. And this team that is just so gutty and so gritty and can have guys like, it's amazing to me the impact on this game Josh Hart can have without scoring any points. And the impact guys like Achiuwa can have. And even Anunoby, who got to the basket a little bit better and was more aggressive than we've seen him. But they have so many guys who impact the games in so many ways. Whether it's, you know, McBride hitting the jumper, sure, but it's also McBride's defense on Maxey at times throughout this series. Achiuwa, who doesn't play in the first two games, shows up huge in this game with his defense on Embiid after Hartenstein gets into foul trouble with 4 blocks. The offense of the Hart not scoring points in the first couple games, hitting massive threes. Someone who's not a shooter, keeping them in the game in game 2 with threes, finishing off the game with 4 in the fourth quarter in game 1. And in a game last night where he's completely ice cold from the field, you still feel like between his 17 rebounds, I mean, the guy impacts the game in every which way. It's unbelievable how good this team is and how many different ways they can beat you. And no matter how they're going, they will figure out a way. They will make the adjustments. And I thought for a coach who gets killed on the minutes and a coach in Thibodeau who gets killed on lack of adjustments, this team, whatever you want to say about it, this team looks far better in the fourth quarter than the Sixers do. For all the minutes they play all year, they look in far better condition, far more ready. Now, I understand part of it is their superstar is dealing with, you know, no meniscus in his knee. But this team looks far better in the fourth quarter. This team looks far more under control. This team looks far more aggressive. This team looks better on offensive rebounding and hitting the boards. They look better on loose balls. They look better at everything. They are far more ready to play this series deep into a series, deep into a game. They are better conditioned. They are better coached. They are tougher. They are smarter. They are more talented. And the adjustments he made defensively. Now, I know Hartenstein got in trouble in rebounding, so he didn't have too much of a choice. But to throw Achiuwa and Anunoby at Embiid was the changing point of the game. And what they did to limit them offensively and Embiid offensively in that fourth quarter is what changed this game. And obviously, Brunson being Brunson. And now you look forward to hopefully putting an end to this series because nobody wants to go back to Philadelphia. Let's be totally honest. And I understand the crowd, and that's the other talking point of this game. MVP chance, the F Embiid chance at the end as they're leaving the building. I mean, we could talk about all the reasons why. We could talk about, and Embiid obviously getting at, we'll get on the fans after the game. We'll maybe play some of that sound and listen to Embiid kill the fan base for allowing the Knicks fans to go into that building and chant MVP at Jalen Brunson. But, I mean, no wonder why. I mean, if the Sixers have any complaints, they have no one to blame but themselves, how they played in this series. And you could take on the fan base. You can never win that. The fact of the matter is this Knicks team has shown life, and this Knicks fan base is starved for it, and they're 2 hours away. And you've shown your fans nothing but crying like babies and taking cheap shots. And that's why that building was half, what sounded like half filled with Knicks fans. But this is an amazing time to be a Knicks fan. What an incredible series. What an incredible player Brunson is. What a start to this hopefully long, fruitful playoff run. As again, I don't want to touch the money, as Boomer says, and I don't want to look forward. But Indiana's up 3-1 over the Giannis-less Milwaukee Bucks. And if we were talking about what kind of, you know, heading into this, we were hoping to get the Pacers over the Sixers in the first round. And if that's the team in the second round, right now, you have to feel about as excited and pumped about this Knicks team and their performance in this game, in this series. Brunson is, shaking off the early cobwebs of this postseason series. And the last two games on the road, when you need your superstar to be a superstar, he shows up, scores 47 points, and gets the Knicks a victory, 97-92. They have a 3-1 lead in this series, and they are one win away on Tuesday night in the Garden from ending this thing quickly in 5 and moving on. And talking about ending quickly, we got the Rangers sweeping the Capitals. We'll get to it. The Yankees scoring 100 runs. And the great Mark Vientos walking it off for the Mets. There's so much to get to. Plus, we have a little bit more of the NFL draft. We had an opportunity to already go over the first round, but obviously there's more than that. So we'll get to the draft.
World Series over. Yankees win. The Yankees win.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
The most successful team in the history of professional sports. Starting the new millennium, the New York Yankees are once again world champions.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, little pony to get us going. All right, I can ride with it. All right, 123, McMonagle here with you. We are now, 12 hours removed, I guess, from the start of the game, so a little less than 12 hours. But what a win for the New York Knicks. 97-92, take a 3-1 lead, and Jalen Brunson, the unquestioned superstar of this team, scores 47. And who was it? Oubre said, oh, yeah, sure. If you take 34 shots, anyone can score 40 points. 47 points. Shut up. Man, do they do a lot of talking in Philadelphia? It is unbelievable. It is unbelievable how much talking they do and how much nonsense on the court they do, too. But an unbelievable performance. And the Knicks fans did travel. And I guess Embiid took note. The same Embiid, who guaranteed a victory in this series. And listen, let's not get too much ahead of ourselves. He hasn't been proven wrong just yet. It takes one more win. But Embiid, who called after game 2, said they were the better team, being the 76ers. And they were going to win this series, and they know what they have to do. He followed that up with a 50-point performance in game 3 to get them back into the series. But last night, only scored 27 points, 12 of that from the foul line, 1 of 6 from 3, which is the difference. I mean, the difference, and we talked about this too. In game 3, they had a barrage of 3-pointers in that third quarter. I mean, they did a lot. It took a 50. This is why I was so confident moving forward, even after that loss in game 3. It took a 50-point performance from Embiid. And an absolute, I think they were 9 of 12 from three-point land in the third quarter. I mean, it took a barrage of threes and a 50-point performance from their superstar to beat the Knicks. And you knew he wasn't going to be able to back it up again. I'm sorry, I just knew. As good as he is and as great as he's been in this series. And early on, he was giving Hartenstein all kinds of trouble. But he gets 27 points. 10 rebounds, 0 offensive rebounds, 0. And the Knicks they overall out-rebounded them 52-42, which isn't terrible. 10 is still a pretty good margin, but not, I thought it was actually more. And then offensive rebounds, the Knicks had 15 and they had 9. And the offensive rebounds in that fourth quarter, where they had 7 and out-rebounded 18-8. So that's the difference right there. They out-rebounded the 76ers 18-8 in the fourth quarter. That's a margin of 10. They only out-rebounded them by a margin of 10. That's the difference in the game right now. I mean, that's the difference in the total rebounds in the game in the fourth quarter. They were even going into the fourth quarter, and then the fourth quarter, the Knicks turned it on and got 7 offensive rebounds and 18 overall. And Embiid gets 0 offensive rebounds. 1 for 6 from three-point land and only 7 for 19 from the floor in 44 minutes. And it looked like he was struggling through every one of those 44. And that's why I just, after game one, you could see he wasn't going to be able to get through a whole series. But I want to get to the sound because a talking point of this game is obviously going to be what this crowd sounded like. And listening to MVP chants. And for Jalen Brunson. And then hearing F. Embiid from the Knick contingent after the game in the building, around the building. And I understand why. Let's be honest. The Sixers just didn't show enough in those first two games. And the Knicks fans are starving. And quite honestly, with the tickets at the prices they are at Madison Square Garden, you probably, I mean, for a place that's only, a 2.5 hour drive, depending on where you are in the tri-state, to go down to Philadelphia, make a night of it, and pay a fraction of what you'd have to pay to see the Knicks in the Garden, why not take advantage? And so many did. And you could tell this fan base just doesn't believe in the 76ers team. And Embiid was embarrassed by it and decided to go after the fans a little bit. I mean, he tried to, you know, halfway it in some way. I love the fans, but they were awful. That always works. But here's Embiid's comments about the fans after the game.
Disappointing. You know, I love our fans. Think he's unfortunate. And I'm not calling him out, but it is disappointing. You know, obviously, you got a lot of Knicks fans, and they're down the road and never seen it. And I've been here for 10 years. Kind of pisses me off, especially because Philly is considered a sports town. So, you know, they've always shown up, and I don't think that should happen. It's not okay.
Yeah, I'm not calling him out, but it pisses me off, and it's not okay. Makes sense. I mean, I'm not calling them out because I love them and they're considered a sports city. It's considered a sports town. After this, I'm not so sure. But it's considered a sports town. And I've never seen this in all my 10 years, and it pisses me off, and it's not okay. But I'm not calling you out. He's calling you out. He's calling out the Philly fans, and I love it. Implosion. Against the guy who, I mean, I'm sorry. I respect him. He's immensely talented. That game the other day, the 50-point game, I mean, he's a dirty player. He's a dirty player. And I understand he's dealing with a diagnosis of Bell's palsy, and I wish him the best, and that's tough. And hopefully he'll, you know, be able to, you know, battle through that, and I feel for him. And I understand now why maybe he was, you know, we saw issues with the eye, and maybe that's why he kind of has his face down a little bit during the post game. So I understand all that, and I appreciate him. And he was dominant in that game, in game 3. But he continues to do things that just, you know, and it's not the first time. Like I saw the Evan clip, and we remember that Claxton play where he kicks him in the junk, you know, when he stands over him, when Claxton's standing over him and he kicks him in the junk, and I mean, pulling down, that's as dirty as it gets. The heart, stepping on Hart's leg isn't that bad in this game, but the elbow to Jalen at Brunson as he's running by and pulling down Mitch Robinson, there's no excuse for it. That's just brutal. But, I mean, he's been incredible. He's an incredible player. He's won an MVP, and now he's getting on the fans. They're falling apart as they go up 3-1, and good for you, Knick fans. Good for you. Taking over. Let's go. 877-337-6666. Why don't you tell me how you feel about it? Here's Duncan, my man Duncan in Union, who's looking for a fight. What's up, Duncan?
What's good, Chris? How you doing this today, man?
I'm doing great. I'm pumped.
Yeah. As am I. I have to be honest, man. I was looking to argue with you. We had a great argument. Well, I had a great argument. I crushed you last week.
Yeah, sure you did.
So I was looking to crush you again.
It's me and the entire world versus you, but good luck on that one, Duncan.
Hey, man, I mean, you know, just because there are a bunch of people that are loud and wrong, it doesn't
matter. No, it's okay.
Right.
You're the only educated one. I remember. I got it.
I mean, you know, at least you admit that.
Yes.
But no, it's going, like, as I told you, your call screen, it's going to be a love fest tonight.
Well, there we go.
I'm a huge Knicks fan. I've been one all my life, and it was great to see Jalen Brunson come out and destroy the Sixers.
Yep.
I have disdain for Embiid after Game 3.
Yep.
And I thought very low of him after Game 2. Him giving that interview and not raising his head and just not being a leader. I've come to the point that I believe that Embiid is a Robin and he needs a Batman. He's very talented, but he's not a killer. He's not the player that's going to step on your neck and, you know, all of those, you know, all
clichés.
Of the things that we say. Yeah, you know, he's not the Michael Jordan, the Kobe Bryant, you know what I'm saying? He's more of the Kevin Durant. He needs a player to take over, and then he can, you know, do his thing and get his points. But I said early on, Knicks in five,
mm-hmm.
and I still believe that wholeheartedly.
Well, thank you for the call, Duncan. I appreciate it. Yeah, hopefully Knicks in five. I'm with you. I don't know if... Listen, he's won an MVP. He's an incredible basketball player. He is on one leg at the moment. He does have Maxey with him. If he were healthy, this would be different. He's clearly on one leg. Is he... I mean, can you win a championship with Embiid as your best player? Right now, I believe him to be slightly soft. And I said it the other day, when soft people have nowhere to turn, they turn and they attack. And that's why he's pulling dirty plays. One, it's been reinforced to him throughout his history that he will not get punished for it, not at a level where it'll eject him or anything of significance. So he knows he can get away with these things. And two, that's what you do when you feel like you have no other option. And he's soft. And this team has been soft. And he's been the heart of this team. So if you want to say that, that's fine. His skill set, I think, I mean, watching the guy play, he's hobbled. He's hobbled. He could barely move up and down the court. He scored 50 points. Is he good enough to be your best player and win a championship? A guy who's 7'2", who has the ability to shoot the way he does? Yes, I do believe that. But now, does he have that mentality? That's something else. But right now, this entire franchise hasn't had that mentality in forever. That this entire team, the entire franchise just doesn't have it. And that's why a lot of people, you know, all the people who disagreed with me, like anybody, when we were talking about that final game of the season against the Bulls, and the torn nature I had watching that game, knowing I want to win every game, but if I win... If they win, then they get the 76ers, and if they lose, they get the Pacers, and the 76ers are a tougher matchup, and we had that discussion forever, or at least a couple days. And anybody, really, any Knicks fan who I talked to who disagreed and wanted the 76ers said this exact thing. They're weak. They're soft. The team is soft. Embiid's beat up, and they're soft. And I think we've seen that come to fruition here. I think we've seen that come to fruition. The Knicks are much more mentally tough. The Knicks are better conditioned. The Knicks look faster and stronger and, you know, stronger on the glass in the fourth quarter than the 76ers do. The 76ers get sloppy with the basketball. Embiid threw one away. There was a couple of bad turnovers. The Knicks have at times too, but it doesn't seem they don't seem to do it in the crucial moments the way the 76ers have in this series. But I don't know about Embiid. I don't know. I understand that he's going to have a reputation here, and he's never been able to stay healthy come playoff time. That's the main thing. He's always banged up every time they get into a playoff series. But now he's calling out the fans. And look, I would be pissed off too, I suppose, but he's got nobody to blame but himself. They played weak basketball. And, you know, they went home down 2-0 after blowing a game you can't lose. And a Knicks fan base that's dying to see this team win, 2 hours away, willing to pay the price for a ticket in Philadelphia, because no matter who, I mean, a guy in Philadelphia is making double his money, and still it's cheaper than what somebody would have to pay to go to the Garden. Peter in Manhattan. What's up, Pete? Peter.
Hey, Chris. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Chris, Nick's question and comment and Rangers question.
Yeah.
Yeah, remember, did you say that Philly got no offensive rebounds today? Is that what you said?
I said Embiid.
Embiid got, all right, interesting.
Yeah, obviously the 76ers got a couple, but Embiid had zero offensive rebounds.
All right, he was a shell today. So good, yeah, great game today for the Knicks. Yeah, I remember Bernard King against Detroit way back. They actually ended up losing a game 7 against Boston in the finals. So I remember that. And then I guess the Ranger question I have is, you know, I'm looking at the Rangers' progress towards the Stanley Cup. So if they face, Carolina next, that's going to be a tough match.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm going to ask a question, then I'll hang up. What do you think, the prospects of that series is? Do you think the Rangers are a better team than Carolina? I mean, I find that to be a tough matchup.
Yeah.
Chris, and then finally, Chris, just a quick question. I called Richard Neal today. And I asked him to list the top Beatles albums. Interestingly, he said Revolver was number one.
Yeah.
And he said that Rubber Soul was two, and that Sergeant Pepper was overrated. So I'll hang up and listen to your answer. Yeah. So that was, you know, I was surprised that he said that. And
the overrated Sergeant Pepper thing. Yeah.
Yeah, he said Sergeant Pepper was greatly overrated, but he went with Revolver number one.
Yeah, a lot of people do. It was I saw, and thank you for the call. Rolling Stone put out a list of the greatest albums of all time, and Revolver was number one. A lot of people like Revolver. I can't imagine. I mean, this is just me, and we don't have to get into the Beatles right now, but I can't imagine putting Revolver over. And Sgt. Pepper's widely considered, you know, a revolutionary album, and, you know, I guess you can call it overrated, you know, whatever. I wouldn't call it overrated, but I couldn't put Revolver over Sgt. Pepper. I couldn't put Revolver over the White Album, and I certainly couldn't put it over my personal favorite, Abbey Road. So, I mean, I like Revolver. All Beatle albums are great, but I don't know how could you put it over? I just don't know. That I'll never understand that, but people do think it's the best. A lot of people do. And you know what else Duncan said there? He referenced Batman and Robin, and he talked about Kevin Durant. And Kevin Durant, you know, they just got swept by Minnesota. And, you know, Edwards scored 40 points, 7 for 13 from 3. He had a monster game. I didn't get to see a lot of it. But they get swept. And, you know, Durant, Beal, and Booker just absolutely get embarrassed here. And Kevin Durant, I mean, he's going to start to become one of the more interesting figures in NBA history. I honestly believe Kevin Durant is about to become one of the more interesting figures in NBA history, because if you look at his talent, I mean, there's no doubting his ability. At his size, the way he can play and shoot. And in this game, he plays 46 minutes, and he plays all the time. He plays every minute when he's healthy. He has been injured a lot. But he loves the ball. He's 2 for 3 from the three-point line. He scores 33 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 blocks. He's a great player. Not only is he a great player, he's won 2 NBA championships. Not only has he won 2 NBA championships, he's won 2 NBA Finals MVPs, and yet nobody views him as a winner. when referencing someone who's a Batman, who is a Robin to a Batman and needs that better player on his team, when referencing Embiid, the first person that's referenced with him, and granted, it's just one call or Duncan, but references Durant. I mean, Durant was as great as Curry is, and I understand he's the face of the team, and they won before he got there, and they won after he got there. I get it. But Durant was the best player on those teams, on those Golden State teams that he was on that won championships. And he was the MVP of the finals both of the years they won finals. And they lost to Toronto because he goes down with the Achilles injury. And yet, because of what's happened in Brooklyn, and now certainly what's happened in Phoenix, an out-and-out disaster, and his inability to get over the hump in OKC, and then joining the team he couldn't get past, he is going to be viewed as a, I don't want to use the term loser, because that's probably a bit much, but he's going to be viewed as a superstar who was either soft, couldn't get it done, you know, didn't care about winning, never wanted it to be his team, didn't care about it. Like, he's going to have this very unique, it's going to be very weird how he's viewed. Because he's not going to be viewed as a winner. And I'm trying to think of another player who would have won championships, been one of, if not the driving force to the championships, MVPs in the final games or final series of the championships, and still perceived as a loser. I don't know how many other players. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. It's a very interesting case, but right now he is perceived as that. He's perceived as a guy who was a ride-along for championships when he wasn't. A guy who didn't want to do it on his own, had no interest in building a team and beating the team that beat him. He was more than happy of joining an already championship-level team. He's moved on twice since. He's tried to put together super teams in two different spots, and they've been enormous failures. Enormous. This is an enormous... For the Suns to just... not win a playoff game. His last two, correct me if I'm wrong here, his last two playoff appearances has been sweeps. Did he play last year for Phoenix?
Last year.
Right, I'm sorry. Right.
It was a 4-2 against Denver.
All right, so 4-2 against Denver.
But the year before was Brooklyn. Was the Celtics. Yeah,
right. Right. So now he is 2-for-12 in his last, 2-for-10, 2-and-10 in his last 12 playoff games. Yeah. He's had three series. He's had two wins. He's 2-10 in his last 12 playoff games, including two sweeps. And he's got a team here of him, Beal, and Booker. And they can't win a game against the Minnesota team that nobody will think can beat Denver.
That'll be an interesting series.
It will be an interesting series. But, I think Denver would probably be the favorite in that series. But he's just an interesting figure. That's more for later. But it's just... Because Duncan mentioned it. And the idea that, Embiid can't be the guy like Durant. I mean, I'm surprised that's the first name. He's won NBA championships. He's won NBA final MVPs. But he can't be the guy. And I'm not even saying Duncan's wrong. I'm just saying it's an interesting perspective. Ringus in Smithtown. What's up, Ringus?
Hey, Big Mac.
What's up, buddy? What's going on?
All right, so big game for the Rangers.
Big game for the Rangers. I was going to get to it at 2 o'clock, but yeah, we can get to it here. Big game for the Rangers as they have swept the Capitals. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy.
Four series in a row. Piss off Washington. Get out of here.
Yeah, no, they've had success. They've had success against the Caps in this playoff run. But it's amazing to me. I don't know about you, but here's what I'll say about the Rangers series real quick. We can do more of it in a little bit at 2 o'clock. But here's what I'll say about the Rangers series. Have you ever, and I know they haven't swept a series. We talked about how important it was to have a quick series and how all those Hank years they went through, like that real run that they went through starting in 2012. Every series was 6-7 games. I mean, it was a lock. They were going to win game one, lose game two. Win game one, lose game two. Every stinking series, no matter who it was against, they all went 7. And we talked about how important it was. And it's the first sweep since 2007 when they swept the Thrashers. That's how long ago it was. And
yeah.
And now, have you ever experienced a Rangers playoff series where I'm not kidding. It was watching a Rangers Cap game in the middle of November. I didn't have a fear for a second. I was never worried watching. I've never experienced watching a playoff series for the New York Rangers and having zero fear. Zero. This was as ho-hum. They're going to win. I'm not worried about it. I don't care if they fall behind. I don't care what happens. The Rangers aren't losing to the Capitals. They could play 10 times. They would sweep the series 10-0. There's no chance they win any of these games. I mean, I was dozing off watching the game last night because on Sundays I wake up early with the kids. Now I'm up late. Like, I'm literally trying to fight staying awake because I'm not interested because they're going to win. It's crazy.
I was very similar. I agree with you, Chris, because I knew that there was no way we were going to lose because we responded every time they scored.
Yep. Every time. You're 100% right. Every time they very rarely held the lead.
Okay. Also, Chris, I had a Beatle point. I'm a big Beatles fan also.
Yeah.
I feel like, I've heard you on Carton and Roberts and everything like that. It seems like you're a very big Paul McCartney fan.
I am.
And that's why you gear towards Sgt. Pepper's.
Well, it's not my favorite album. My favorite album is Abbey Road. But yes, I would argue that every album, the best songs are Paul songs, but that's fine. I mean, I would think even Revolver. I mean, I would say "Got to Get You Into My Life" for No One and "Here, There, and Everywhere" are probably my three favorite on the album.
All right, what about "I'm Only Sleeping"?
"I'm Only Sleeping" is a great song, but I mean, they're all great. They're Beatles.
Your Bird Can Sing.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I stand by. "I Got to Get You Into My Life" is the best song on that album, in my opinion. And "Good Day Sunshine." I mean, there's so many. I mean. They're all, lest I forget, Eleanor Rigby. I mean, you know, they're all, let's be honest, Paul just wipes the floor with John in every album. That's right, I'm a big Paul guy, sorry to tell you. I would say, to me, John's, the one album that might be close is the White Album. Because I think Dear Prudence and Happiness Is a Warm Gun might be my two favorite. I mean, that's Dear Prudence is by far my favorite John song. And it might be my favorite song on the White Album. So I would say that. And then early on, they wrote them together. It's hard to even, it's different. But like the after from Rubber Soul on, when they started to feel uniquely different between the two guys, I would say the White Album is probably the one album I could say John had the better of it. Other than that, I can't. But that's just me. Rich in Brick, New Jersey. What's up, Rich?
Hey, what's going on, C-Mac?
What's up, buddy? How are you?
Good games tonight all the way around. Great night for New York.
What a day. What a day. Everybody wins.
It was.
Everybody wins.
It's very rare that you get to see that, but you got to celebrate it.
Yes.
However, now I'm going to pick some people apart, and the person who I'm going to pick apart is we're going to talk a little Yankees.
Okay.
Great offense, but in a 15-5 win.
Yeah.
Can someone explain to me why Boone had to empty out that bullpen the way that he did and made his bullpen unavailable for the next series, which is,
yeah,
in my mind, is more important.
Oh, of course.
Playing the
it's a big series against the Orioles.
Yeah,
I don't know if he
big
did.
Series.
Yeah, I don't know if he did. I don't know if he did make.
Oh yeah, he did.
No, I don't know if he made anybody unavailable. You also don't want to go into a series without guys pitching in 3 days. I'd have to look back on it. I don't remember Hamilton in the day before. Hamilton might have gone a couple of days without throwing. You don't want to have him not pitch for 4 days going into a Baltimore series. You want to get him a little bit, but if he has to pitch in the first game, then he's done for the second. That's true. I agree with you. It was a little puzzling, especially the way he treated the first game, which, in my opinion, you want to get on Boone, you're picking the wrong day. Because, in my opinion, well, Boone on Friday, I defend Aaron Boone. I'm going to defend what your problem with him was. I it's minimal to me. They threw in meaningless innings just to get some work in. Friday night was the most frustrated and puzzled I've been by Aaron Boone since maybe pulling making the pitching change in game two of the ALDS against the Rays. Because I have no idea what Boone was doing on Friday. I have no idea what he was doing.
Famous quote.
Yeah.
You play to win the game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, I understand.
This whole thing.
Well, I listen. Yeah, but that's a football coach. That's a football coach. Football, at that time, they played 16. Now they play 17. It's a lot different. You have to, you do have to massage this thing. There's no doubt about it. You can't just throw out guys over and over and over again. So you're suggesting it doesn't matter. If Clay Holmes had pitched 3 days in a row, you send him out for a fourth day because you play to win the game. There are rules. There are some things that I think you should follow, and it shouldn't be just because it is a marathon and you're trying to set yourself up. But in that situation, when they take the lead, that's the thing for me. In that game, so if you don't know what we're talking about, it's the first game of the series. They're going into extra innings. He brings in Clay Holmes. Clay Holmes throws 10 pitches and gets through the ninth inning. Then they score in the 10th. And here's my problem. If they don't score, if the score is still tied going to the bottom of the 10th, I have no problem not bringing in Clay. I'm not going to pitch Clay two innings just to keep a tie game in extra innings. I'm not going to do it.
No, not I don't for a tie game. It makes no sense.
Not for a tie game. I don't bring him out. The fact that he pitched 10 pitches, then they take the lead. I think there's no reason you can't bring him back out for the next inning and try and save that game and win it. I think it makes no sense not to. But then even if you don't want to do that, because, Chris, it's not just about the pitches. It's about the up-downs, and I don't want to send them back out there. He's pitching a ton, blah, blah. Fine. You cannot bring in a guy who just got here, who's been DFA'd by two different franchises three different times, who hasn't, your catcher hasn't caught him, he just got here, and he's awful, and you have other guys like Hamilton who hadn't thrown. You have other guys to bring in to save that game. I have no idea. In fact, I disagree with not bringing in Clay Holmes. I have no freaking idea why Tompkins the guy. I have no idea. That is the most puzzled I've been by Aaron Boone, and I'll defend him, and I still think he's a good manager, and I love Aaron Boone. He just made a poor decision in that game. I have no idea what he was thinking. None. It was hideous.
And that's the game right then and there. If we need to win the division against Baltimore, let's say if they get back on track after getting swept by the A's,
they lost two out of three.
We're going to be talking about.
No, we're not. There's going to be a million different games from now till then. No one's going to point down to one game. And you make it sound like Clay Holmes again. As much as I'll say, Clay Holmes can't come in and give up a run and blow the game. They win the game if Clay Holmes is back out there? Like, you know it, they win? We don't know what happens. I'm puzzled by the decision-making, don't get me wrong. But we always talk about, well, if we went the other way, it's a guaranteed victory. You have no idea. We have no idea what would have happened. All I know is that he threw in a pitcher that cannot be brought in for his first Yankee appearance in that spot to save a game against a very good Milwaukee team. It made absolutely zero sense.
No sense.
Zero sense. And I wanted to tweet it. I don't apologize necessarily, but my weekends are just so damn busy with the kids, and I never start things on time. And the hours finally caught up to me on Friday. So I know there are a lot of you who think I'm this Yankee fanboy and will never comment on Boone or complain about anything. I passed out Friday night. I was with the kids all. I was doing different things. I had errands to run. I didn't really sleep during the day on Friday, and I couldn't make the game. I passed out. I watched the game the next morning. I was done with it at like 9:30, 10, and I feel like it's awkward to then tweet out things the next morning. I don't know. I just don't do it. I feel weird on it. So a lot of you Yankee fans probably who hate me or think I'm this, you know, Boone defender and Cashman defender, nothing to say when Boone makes a mistake. What do you say now? Yeah, no, it was awful. I just didn't get around to tweeting it. because I very rarely watch Yankee games on time during the weekend. I'm busy with the kids and stuff. But yeah, I have no idea what Aaron Boone was doing. None. Like I don't care what he said. I understand that the bullpen's taxed. They're gonna, you know, pitch. They're playing all these games in a row. Clay Helms is on pace for more than 80 innings or 80 games. I get it. I would have went back to Clay Helms. I think he should have went back to Clay Helms. I think 10 pitches, if they don't score, fine. But they take the lead, throw your closer out there after he threw 10 pitches and see if he can get through it quick too. But even if you don't want to do that, you can't throw in Tom. You can't throw in that pitcher in that spot. Now, they end up scoring 30 runs over the next 2 days, and it diminishes the anger because they took the series. The offense has exploded. Judge hits, you know, home runs in back-to-back games. Rizzo's hitting home runs all over the place. Gleyber Torres has gotten back into the action, and the offense has looked great the last 2 days. And I know they didn't face their best necessarily, but that's a good baseball team. The Yankees just went in, could have swept, and took 2 out of 3. And for all the people who look at everything, like honestly, like the last caller, I understand. You want to complain about Friday night with Boone? Fine, that makes no sense. You're really going to complain about who pitches the last couple innings? He's setting up his bullpen the way he wants it set up. It's not wasting guys. You got to get some work. I have to look at the games and how many, like, it might have been he pitched, like, Hamilton should have been the guy who came in to close out the game on Friday night. But maybe he threw three out of four games and had a couple days off and they didn't want to push him. But now it's been a gap of like 4 days without pitching. So you want to make sure he doesn't go into a Baltimore series not having thrown the ball in 5 days. Like you just don't know. I'm open. You know, that doesn't bother me. We get hung up on the minutia. Friday night, Boone was just hard to fathom. I couldn't understand what the hell he was thinking. If you're not going to bring out Clay Holmes, bring out one of your better relievers, someone who's pitched them for them before. Like, literally, anybody. Anybody but Tonkin. Anybody. I'm not kidding. Anybody. I don't know how in the world Boone came up with that one. But having said that, I still love him. And right now, the Yankees are 19-10. I mean, we have so many complaints. I go on Twitter, I get bombarded with complaints. It's ridiculous. They're 19-10. They're a game up on the Baltimore Orioles, who everyone tells me is just phenomenal. And how about those Baltimore Orioles? The Yankees split a four-game series against the A's, and it's the end of the world. It's embarrassing. What a joke the Yankees are. How could you possibly only split a series against Oakland? It's a joke. In Yankee Stadium, I'm embarrassed for them. This is the team you love, Chris. This is the team you think can win a championship. They can't even win 3 out of 4 against the Oakland A's. It's embarrassing. They're terrible. The Baltimore Orioles just lost 2 out of 3 to them at home. And what do Yankee fans say? Yeah, those Orioles are talented, man. They're going to be tough this series. Okay. All right. So when the Yankees lose, it's it. Every loss is an indictment on Boone, Cashman, Hal, and the way the Yankees do business. And every win is just, in the meantime, until we get to that brutal loss, that's an indictment on Boone, Cashman. It's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Sometimes this fan base just drives me nuts. They're 19-10. They just went into Milwaukee, a first-place team, one of the best records in the National League, and took 2 out of 3 and pounded them, where position players were pitching in both games. But why the hell is Boone throwing those relievers?